conference with we had a conference with the county commissioners regarding the letter that you all had signed here some back on May 24th regarding the American Rescue Plan Act, where we were asking for some funds for broadband and for water system and for the arrears. We had a very good meeting. Sean did the main presentation, and Sean Delplane and Tom Martin were there to answer any other questions, which there were a number of questions. Anyway, the meeting went good. I have a good feeling they'll let us know within the next couple of weeks on the arrears in particular. And the other projects, I'm not sure. They have $7+ million this year for the county and another $7+ million for next year. So we're just not exactly sure what will happen. But we should know in a few weeks, and we'll keep updated in the following following commissioner meetings to let you know what's happening. So just an update while we're waiting for Will there.
Thanks, Doug.
I just got a hold of Will, and he's up in the boondocks in eastern Washington, and so he won't be joining us. So he said to go ahead, and he'll catch up at a future time by looking over the presentation and asking questions separately. So if that's okay with you other commissioners, we'll go ahead with it.
Works for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Sean, it's all yours then. Go ahead.
Okay, I believe that John Purvis was going to kick off the presentation today. Is that right, John?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's John's, right.
Okay.
That is correct. I will go ahead and share my screen. Okay, is everybody seeing a single slide, District Wildfire Mitigation, Vegetation Management, and Protective
yes.
Systems, O&M?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's working. So basically, I'm going to, for the start off of this presentation involving myself and others, I'm going to cover strategic planning, wildfire risk, and history. And that'll be followed with an overview of vegetation management program. Led by Terry Lind with some engineering input from Mike Hill. They'll be covering the topic of NERC FAC-003, Transmission Vegetation Management, a NERC standard. That's going to be followed by Protective System Operations and Maintenance, covered by Doug Adams, or Transmission and Substation System Supervisor. Doug was the district's NERC compliant officer prior to deregistration, and he's going to touch on NERC PRC 004, misoperation identification and correction, as well as NERC PRC 005, protective system maintenance. Okay, strategic planning, wildfire risk, and history. The image you see is the Cold Springs fire from September of last year in Okanagan. There was a reported 189,000 acres burned, and I believe Nephram Valley Electric lost right at 300 power poles. And one thing I want to emphasize, this is not something you want to see driving Highway 101 one of these days. So I'm going to take some time to go through some recent wildfire press headlines, articles, and I want to emphasize that wildfire protection has been on our radar for quite a few years with a heightened sense over the last 3 years after the California Camp Fire fire from 2018. This is well worth reading. PG&E equipment started more than 1,500 fires from June 14th through December 17th. That's from the Wall Street Journal a couple years ago. If you count that out, that's more than a fire a day. And then also a little bit later on, we read PG&E pleaded guilty on Tuesday to 84 counts of involuntary manslaughter and one count of illegally causing a fire. That's from the New York Times in an update of the 2018 fire. A little bit later on, we have the company has put into place a new board of directors. Additionally, PG&E has funded a trust to compensate victims of wildfires, and this includes $5.4 billion in cash as well as stock representing 22% of the company's ownership. That's from the Utility Dive update of the same fire. And if you put the pencil to it, that comes out to $13.5 billion settlement, equivalent to $2,400 per customer, which would be, not to mention the loss of life, a big rate impact for all of their customers. And if you put that on a customer count, that's equivalent to, for us, would be close to a $2,400 cost per customer or 120% of our annual retail sales. Now, that's all in California focused on the 2018 Camp Fire fire, but they've been previous fires that PG&E had pled responsible for. But also in Washington, you know, we've also had some problems here. For example, from the Enterprise, we got for the second time in 4 years, the state DNR is holding number one of Klickitat County responsible for a wildfire for collection of fees, suppression costs, and the amount of over $2 million. After their investigator concluded the fire was negligently caused by PUD number one of Klickitat County. Once again, that was from the Enterprise. Now, that's just fire suppression cost, but it still came out to about $150 per customer for that PUD. Now, Klickitat will be arguing in court, I'm sure, that they weren't responsible. But keep in mind, DNR was had the investigatory responsibility, so it's going to be a hard one to overcome. So like I say, when you read this type of information that we've been reading over the last 3 years, wildfire is very much a major concern, a strategic concern. Now, I want to mention that we've had a couple strategic initiatives in our plan for many years now, associated with both with protective systems and vegetation management. One has to do with the conversion and upgrade of substation modernization devices, and the other had to do specifically with vegetation management, maintain established vegetation management cycles and the plan. More recently, we added additional wildfire-specific strategic initiatives, and this was brought on by the past, you know, 3 or 4 years of wildfire reporting. And we also have included wildfire as a major element of our district's emergency response plan, once again, these two initiatives prepare for the risk of wildfires in Collin County and minimize exposure to lawsuits through wildfire preparation in the county. These are relatively new. I believe they went in the 2019 plan for the first time. Okay, completed elements of prior strategic initiatives include we added and outfitted a second tree trimming crew in 2014. We now have two tree trimming crews, one brushing crew. And I want to note 15 years ago, we did not have an internal vegetation management crew, just a single contract crew with fairly poor results and many more tree-related outages and relative risk. More recently, starting about 5 years ago, we implemented vegetation management analysis and tools in our GIS. And more recently than that, as part of the AEGIS inspection that occurred after the Camp Fire fire in California in 2018, we did a significant update to the vegetation management plan and did that in consultation with AEGIS, our insurance underwriter. We also, over the last 12 years and longer, actually, we've implemented protective system maintenance and device coordination programs with substation modernization. We've expanded substation shop staffing and capabilities and implemented protective device maintenance schedules in accordance with good industry practice. And we also published comprehensive system protection guidelines for all district protective equipment. That's from the circuit switchers on our transmission down to fuses at the end of our distribution feeders. We also, in 2014, we deregistered due to the Southwest Louisiana Electric Cooperative suit with FERC. But I want to emphasize, when we deregistered, we retained all non-administrative requirements that we were obligated under the prior NERC standards. So basically, we've run a proactive maintenance strategy as opposed to a run-to-failure maintenance strategy that some utilities have taken in an effort to lower their operating cost.
Yeah, John, let me just add something to that. Back in 2010, when we went to our first single contract, our first single in-house crew, it was mostly for reliability. It wasn't necessarily for fire, but that certainly is another good reason, because our vegetation management crew does a great job of clearing. And then we added the second crew, as you mentioned, here in 2014. Now, I was told by someone back in those times that I'm saying 50 years, but I have really no idea what the actual date was. Out in Forks, out west, they had some major fires out there when it was dry. So it is a concern that sometimes you think it could never happen here because it's so wet, but it has happened in the past. So it is something that we want to be very aware of. And as John mentioned, we got it in the strategic plan, and we're looking at that for the future. Go ahead, John. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. And we'll touch upon that Forks fire. It was actually 70 years ago that, if I understand it correctly. But before we get there, I want to talk about good industry practice. Good industry practice mitigates risk. And it's worthwhile reading this verbatim. Good industry practice means standards, practices, methods, and procedures conforming to the law and the degree of skill and care, diligence, prudence, foresight, which would reasonably and ordinarily be expected from a skilled and experienced person or body engaged in a similar type of undertaking under same or similar circumstances. I believe that's one of the legal definitions. One thing about good industry practice, it's not static and evolves over time and new experiences, meaning vegetation management, wildfire risk. We're not looking at what was done 10, 15, 20 years ago. We're looking much more recently. And as our experience, have new experience, we have to adapt and adjust. And we have been doing that. Failure to adhere to good industry practice invariably implies negligence, as determined by judge or jury. And I want to point out that when we're judged, and including our risk or liability or our risk for loss, it's not going to be the experts who are, you know, making the determination. It's going to be the non-experts. And they're going to judge us based on what we do compared to what other utilities do, as well as what they believe we should be doing, irregardless of what other utilities are doing. And we're well aware of this, you know, this factor. You know, and it applies most specifically and with, you know, wildfires and the potential damages and losses, including loss of life. Okay, this is the latest U.S. Forest Service wildfire hazard potential map, and the areas of orange and red represent high and very high wildfire risk potential, which is, as you see, predominantly in the western United States. Now, for the actual risk, you have to look at where electrical lines are, so that plays into it. But you can see where California, this is a very high concern. A substantial portion of the non-desert areas of California are either high or very high risk of fire. And even here along the Cascades and in eastern Washington and a few locations in western Washington, there's concerns here. So we can bring the U.S. Forest Service information into RGIS and overlay with our electric lines to pinpoint potential risk and exposure. Fortunately, there are no high risk or very high risk areas in our county, although you do see in the drier portion of the county, predominantly on the eastern side of our county, there is a somewhat higher risk of fire. So, climate PUD is predominantly low or very low risk, and we do have some moderate risk areas, but for those moderate risk areas per U.S. Forest Service, we do not have overhead lines. We have avoided installing lines where the risk is high, and we've done that, you know, going many, many years back. But as Doug mentioned, there are some serious consequences are possible, and I took this from a DNR literature in history, and it reads, in the summer of 1951, extremely dry weather set the stage for the disaster in the Kalawa River Valley in the town of Forks. Around 1,600 acres of forest burned after sparks from a logging train ignited a wildfire near Camp Creek on August 6th. The fire was eventually controlled, but when a drop in humidity and a strong east wind occurred on September 20th, a hot spot erupted into the Great Forks Fire of 1951. And as you well know, we sometimes get those easterlies, and it's a little contrary to what we're used to, but you know, we have to expect that periodically. The particular fire progressed 18 miles in less than 8 hours, burning a path 3 miles wide. Residents and Forks were evacuated, and many homes were lost. Now think about that, 8 hours, 18 miles. That's not time for your fire jumpers or help from the outside coming in. You know, that typically take days, you know, a couple of days or more before you get outside help. And in our state, that outside help might be fully deployed elsewhere. So the potential is even something worse happening at some point in the future as far as our area. And to give you an idea of how substantial this was, a total of 38,000 acres were burnt in the fire, a mill, a hotel, a motel, and 28 homes destroyed. But fortunately, there were no loss of life. Now, overlay what is there today, and this would be far worse. And for the quick math, 38,000 acres is about 59 square miles. Gives you an idea of how much, you know, what kind of damage that looks like on a wide scale. So I guess if commissioners have any questions on the strategic risk and history, I'll entertain those now, or we can wait until the end. Are there any questions? Okay, if there's no questions, I'm going to pass the baton to Terry Lind. And Terry will be covering the district's vegetation management program. Terry, I hope you're ready to go.
Yeah, I sure am. I'll go ahead and share my screen here. And let's see here. And, okay, are you guys seeing just the one slide now, the vegetation management program?
Nope. I think you got something else up.
Oh, there we go. Zoom. How's that?
Yes.
You might want to switch to the single panel. We're seeing your notes and everything.
Oh, okay. I'm not seeing. John, can you tell me how to get back to that?
Just hit your escape.
Okay. Are we seeing just the one slide now?
No. I think stop sharing and go ahead and put your presentation on your screen two, and then start it from there and share screen two.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's see you again.
You'll need to stop. You'll probably need to stop sharing.
Yeah, I'm trying to find. There it is. Okay. Stop sharing and now
start sharing with screen two with your presentation on screen two.
And well, I still don't have it, do I? How's that look? Can you see it on the just the one slide now?
No, you need to start sharing. You need to actually start sharing on your screen. Okay, I guess, and hit your slideshow down at the bottom right. I think you got it.
Great, now I'm not seeing my note. Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay, thank you for bearing with me. Sorry about that. Good afternoon. I'd like to take some time to give a general overview of the district's vegetation management program and NERC FAC-003-4. I'll begin with the district's Vegetation Management Plan, or VMP. I'll also demonstrate how our program measures up to the requirements of NERC. NERC is the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. The district's Vegetation Management Plan is designed to reduce outages caused by trees and to provide access to our facilities. Our objectives are to increase crew safety, reduce outages, reduce fire risk, increase reliability to customers, and to improve access to poles and facilities. A proactive vegetation management plan significantly improves reliability and safety. It also improves identification and removal of hazard trees. A few statistics. The district has just under 700 miles of overhead distribution line with an average of a 30-foot wide right-of-way. We have 108 miles of overhead transmission line with an average 70-foot right-of-way, and over 1,100 miles of underground distribution line, which also requires vegetation removal for surface facilities such as transformer and J-boxes, as well as for the right-of-way. To accomplish our vegetation management needs, we have 2 3-man tree trimming crews and a 2-man right-of-way maintenance crew. We have a 1 to 5 year maintenance cycle depending on density and growth rates, which includes all of our transmission line, all of our distribution lines from substations to the end of the circuits. Hotspotting is identified by qualified employees during line inspections or normal travel, and customer requests after being substantiated by linemen, servicemen, or other qualified employees. Our integration includes tight right-of-way software within our GIS mapping software. With it, we can track maintenance and planning for vegetation management activities. We can perform analysis on vegetation management data, streamline reporting to AGIS for insurance audits, It's linkable with our OMS, our outage management system, and it provides powerful scheduling, management, and analysis tools. This slide demonstrates the district's vegetation trim cycles. They vary between 1 and 5 years, again, depending on density and growth rates. This slide shows the same trim cycle, it's just blown up a bit for a better visual. This is down in the Dungeness area. You can see that in the yellow, this area out here, we just have to trim, you know, every 5 years. But up here in the pink area, it's a little denser, getting up in the foothills a little bit more. That needs to be trimmed every 3 years. 10 to 15 years ago, we didn't even have a vegetation management software. Our records were kept on maps in a folder. Now the frontline workers on the vegetation management crews are inputting all data directly into our vegetation management dashboard software. To have our three vegetation crews properly equipped, we have two bucket trucks. We've got an excavator with multiple heads for cutting vegetation and performing road maintenance. We've got a track loader with multiple heads for cutting vegetation and for performing road maintenance. We've got a track bucket available for hard to get to right-of-ways. We've got two chip trucks and three wood chippers. This is our newest bucket truck. It's a 2020 Freightliner 4x4 truck. It's a Terex High Ranger 6070 boom. It's got a 70-foot working height. We actually just received this one about a month ago. Let's see, on this screen, the picture on the left shows an aerial line clearance trimming function happening there. And the picture on the right shows one of our line clearance tree trimmers climbing the trees to trim in an area that's inaccessible to trucks. Here you see the excavator and skid steer used for right-of-way mowing and maintenance, as well as the truck used by the Romo crew to get them and their equipment to the job. ROMO stands for Right-of-Way Maintenance Operators. We call them the ROMO crew. Let's see. Here's some more examples of some of the work they do out there. The slide on the left shows the ROMO excavator side trimming the edge of the roadway. Notice that the road's been resurfaced, and the crew also replaced culverts in this area. The slide on the right shows nighttime work on the Elwha Hill. This is a before and after shot of our transmission line out near Bowman Beach. That's out towards Nia Bay. And you see pretty well what the job those guys do. Make it a lot safer, a lot less risk of fire. This is a shot out by Morris Creek Dip behind Koenig Subaru. Before and after shot. We've had declining tree-related outages for several years, largely due to adding a second line clearance tree crew rather than hiring contract crews and by active elimination of our worst exposures. Tree trimming and removals have reduced tree-related outages by 35% over the last decade. Because of that, we see less severe consequences and damage during major weather events, less frequent customer impacts, and safer electrical operations. Trees do still count for 40% of the outages and half of the total outage minutes that we experience. I'd like to emphasize that largely due to professional and tactful employees, we're able to trim and clear hundreds of miles of line per year, often with dramatic aesthetic impacts, with almost no customer complaints. The district's program has received the highest possible evaluations in 2017 and 2020 from the APPA RP3, and in both 2015 and 2018 during Aegis Insurance underwriter inspections. Now, let's give you a little overview of NERC's FAC-003-4. The purpose is to maintain reliable electric transmission system by using a defense-in-depth strategy to manage vegetation located on transmission rights-of-way and minimize encroachments from vegetation located adjacent to the right-of-way, thus preventing the risk of those vegetation-related outages that could lead to cascading. It is not intended to prevent customer outages due to tree contact with lower voltage distribution system lines. FAC 003-4 applies to owners of transmission lines that operate at 200 kV or above, transmission lines operated below 200 kV that are identified as an element of an interconnection reliability operating limit, transmission lines operated below 200 kV identified as an element of a major Western Electrical Council transfer path in the bulk electric system. Each transmission line from above that is located outside the switchyard, station, or substation, and any portion of span that is crossing the substation fence, and generation facility requirements are basically identical to the transmission facility requirements. There are three types of requirements. There are performance-based requirements, risk-based requirements, and competency-based. These three types of requirements are considered for all district vegetation management policies, programs, and operational practices as well. This chart shows the minimum vegetation clearance distance for different voltages and at different altitudes. The plow and crews trim well beyond this MVCD for minimum vegetation clearance distance. So through the requirements here, there's seven different requirements and seven measures that cover all of the rules that they need to follow. The green check marks that have been added to these requirements slides, they show that the district's plan covers these requirements, even though the district is not bound by them based on our size, voltages, and lack of generation. These requirements must be followed without delay. There's no putting them off. And the requirements are just that, functions required of affected entities. The measures are the ways of documenting or showing that you're complying with all of the requirements. We meet standards on transmission. We meet them for distribution too, with the exception that we have a 3-year requirement for distribution inspections rather than the 12 months listed for transmission lines. They require that you do the transmission lines every 12 months. They give you a 6-month grace period. You technically have up to 18 months. This requirement says that each entity must complete 100% of their annual vegetation work plan with some modifications allowed for changing conditions. The district does not have any transmission lines that obligates adherence to NERC FAC-003-4. No part of the bulk electrical system. Our actual voltages on transmission line is 69 and 115 kV. Even so, the district absolutely adheres to all of the functional requirements contained in the standard for transmission facilities. In most respects, the district substantially exceeds the requirements. Except for the 3-year distribution line inspection interval, the district also generally meets the functional requirements for distribution facilities. Excuse me. From a practical standpoint, the district must meet or exceed the NERC requirements to ensure acceptable service reliability for a seasonally storm-prone and largely wilderness service area. Well, and that concludes my presentation. Could I answer any questions? And if not, I'll now turn it over to Mike Hill, our engineering manager. He'll be discussing engineering responsibilities and controls for vegetation management and minimizing wildfire risk. Thanks for your time. Okay, I'll start sharing there.
Okay, can you see one slide on the screen now?
I think we're seeing your notes as well.
All right. It's not what I did last time, but hold on.
I think we're still sharing one of your screens.
I see it there. I stopped it. How about that?
Not yet.
All right.
You probably need to put your presentation on screen two and share screen two. There you go.
Okay. All right. I'll be going over some of the engineering aspects regarding wildfire mitigation. The U.S. Forest Service is in the process of changing some of their requirements regarding wildfire mitigation, but we're waiting to see what those final details are. In the meantime, we have joined the Utility Fire Prevention Task Force so that we can work through the upcoming changes together. We've also been working closely with EPA regarding their right-of-way maintenance, primarily focusing on identifying and removing danger trees. As John and Terry talked about, in the 2018 AEGIS insurance inspection included a major focus on vegetation management and wildfire risk. EPA has also recently adopted a new wildfire mitigation plan that I'll go over now. EPA's updated public safety power shutoff procedure. For us, we have to have dry ground, sustained winds over 60 miles per hour, and a humidity level below 20%, which is very unlikely to impact us. This is a map that shows the transmission lines throughout Pinal County and a portion of Jefferson County. First, I'll start and I'll identify the lines that are there. EPA is shown in blue from Fairmont over to Sappho. Our PUD lines are red from Sappho to Forks and Sappho to Nia Bay, and then from Silverado and Joyce back to Blinn. This green is a line that we removed between 2012 and 2016, a transmission line that wasn't used anymore. So we got that out of there, and that was through a heavily forested Forest Service area. We also transferred some lines to Jefferson County in 2015, and those are shown here in the orange. And then this yellow section is an alternating feed through a forested area that we shut off during fire season, which actually we shut off just last week. So it's de-energized until we need to use it. I'll also go over a little bit of what we do with transmission distribution rebuild and that ends up helping us for fire mitigation. This is a transmission pole west of Joyce along the highway. And the pole was set in the early 1960s. This is a fiberglass pole. I mean, a cedar pole and wood arms, and you can see the conductors here. You barely see the transmission conductors, but you can see the distribution a little more. They're pretty baggy all the way across here. And our transmission to distribution clearance from this bottom of this insulator to the cross arm is less than the PUD standard of 12 feet. And when we do a rebuild, we bring everything up to current National Electric Safety Code, PUD specifications. We meet Washington State Department of Transportation clearances, and we typically replace with the fiberglass poles and cross arms and tighten the conductors if they need it. So this is a picture of a pole after it was replaced in the same location. You can see it's a taller pole. Our conductors are quite a bit tighter through here. We've got 12 feet between our transmission and our distribution, and we've got fiberglass cross arms on both points there, and it's tighter across the road, and all these lines are tighter. Any questions on what I just presented? If not, I will hand it over to Doug Adams, our Transmission Distribution System Supervisor, and he will go over system protection.
Okay, Mike, you have to stop sharing your screen.
I just found it. Got it.
All right. I am Doug Adams, and I'm the Substation Transmission Supervisor. And today I'm going over our general protection systems maintenance and operations program. I'll begin with NERC PRC 04, which is involved with identifying any potential myth operations of the bulk electric system. As John mentioned earlier, we are no longer in the the NERC standards no longer apply to us, as we were able to get ourselves removed from that program just because we are a radial distribution entity. But a lot of the practices that they do follow in NERC are very good guidelines in general. So I'm going to kind of go through what their standards are for this and how we generally follow those guidelines. So as far as MIF operations, they want us to identify any potential MIF operations within 120 calendar days or about 4 months of when a MIF operation occurred. And then also keep some type of record, which pretty much includes anything that you can think of, they will accept as a record. In our case, we typically keep track of it through email, through our outage database, which is in our NASC. Then we also have the relay event files from any relays that were involved, if it was a substation event. And then any equipment test results of the equipment, if it required any testing to restore it. And one of the things that NERC requires anybody do is to develop a corrective action plan or CAP. And that would be for larger entities, because they typically have a really long response time to actually do anything. And they also typically have multiple redundancies. So if something fails, they can take that device offline and leave it offline until they can develop their corrective action plan and come up with a way to repair it and keep that from happening again in the future. Most of our equipment in the field does not have too many redundancies. So if something does happen, we typically respond to it that same day and try to get it back online in the same day. If there's any instances where we cannot get it returned to normal immediately, all parties such as the dispatchers and line crews are notified via email and phone calls, and then we notify everybody what the corrective action is going to be for the near future and what the timeline looks like for getting that equipment restored. And then the field is also tagged, the equipment is also tagged in the field with similar notes on it, just so that everybody remembers what is going on with that equipment. And another thing that they require for PRC04 is that you maintain records for at least 1 year. All of our records retention requires a minimum of about 10 years for any records, so we far exceed NERC's standard on that. And then protection system defined by NERC are the protective relays, which are actually identifying the actual status of the lines in the field, the communication systems for those protective relays, any of the current and voltage sensing devices that are actually serving the relays, the station batteries or the equipment batteries that would be found in like line reclosers, and then the control circuitry inside of the circuit breakers themselves that operate the circuit breakers as well as provide inputs to the relays also. Now, this is where it gets a little kind of cloudy with NERC. They tend to be vague and specific at the same time. So to them, a MIF operation could be any one of the following things, but at the same time, it might not be any of the following things. And that's kind of what this goes into. And it's a lot of language saying these are all the things that you need to watch for and tell us whether or not one of these things was actually a misoperation or not. And we look at any of these and do this ourselves, like identify, did this equipment actually do something that it wasn't supposed to do? And that would be a misoperation. And essentially that's what it says right here. So failure to automatic reclose is not included as a misoperation. A breaker failure operation does not constitute a misoperation. Failure to trip or a slow trip does not constitute a misoperation. But those were also things that they listed previously on the other page that were misoperations. So for 2020, we were able to look into our outreach database and identify 488 separate incidents. And even then, some of these, you can see in the big yellow slice, that's unknown. A lot of those aren't necessarily outages. They could have just been blinks or anything like that. Because there's a kind of light blue slice up in the right side that says non-PD outage. That were things outside of our control, things that could have been on the customer side of the meter, things that could have been caused by Bonneville. But predominantly, most of the outages that we experience in our district are from trees, limbs, and animals. We have very few equipment failures or misoperations that are outside of that. The equipment failure down in the bottom right could be a variety of things, could be overloaded transformers. Without going into specific items, this is just kind of the things that we take a look at every year to try to minimize everything that we can. And this is just, I guess, a snapshot of that. And then another thing that we try to do to lower misoperations is a misoperation could be a coordination issue between things such as a breaker at the substation opening before a fuse downline that's protecting a customer's transformer. And so we have a 61-page document that we have that makes sure that we coordinate all of our devices across the entire district to make sure that things open only when they're supposed to open and not before other devices downstream are supposed to open, thus minimizing the impact to the fewest possible customers. And here's a screenshot of the actual outage database itself. So you can see just kind of a listing of all of the reported outages, whether they came through the automated phone system or even now our new AMI system can, the meters themselves can report an outage. And then also customers calling in, customers reporting them online. Everything is kept stored in our database, and we can do a search on specific causes, specific areas, specific timelines. So that was the summary of the misoperations, so PRC04. So now we're moving on to PRC05. This is meant for maintenance of all of the protective devices in a system, just to make sure that you don't have any misoperations due to equipment failures. So our requirements. Protection systems that are installed specifically for detecting faults. And they named a couple of different ones, such as reclosing relay, supervisory relays or functions for voltage or synchronism, and then voltage sensing devices for generators and things like that. Basically, the only things that we have on our system are reclosing relays for two transmission lines, and then everything else is a differential relay or overcurrent relay for substation equipment, and then reclosing relays that are for the actual distribution feeder lines, either at the substation or in the case of line reclosers that are on the line themselves. And their requirements for that is everybody should have some type of maintenance program for all of the protection systems, and then we have to identify which maintenance method we choose. Here at Qualum, we do a time-based maintenance program. We don't run our equipment at high enough loading or operate enough times to go on a performance-based. Time-based is actually makes the most sense to make sure that we go and test all of the equipment, because there's some parts of the system that hardly ever get used, and if we went with a performance-based, we could be subject to failures in those areas just because they would receive less maintenance. And if we visited one substation on a yearly basis versus another substation on like a decade basis, that one being maintained on a decade basis is probably actually going to end up with more problems down the road. And per NERC, they have a whole system of tables that you identify what type of equipment you need to do maintenance on. All of their equipment was a minimum of 6 years of maintenance, or 6 years that equipment has to be maintained. And it actually even extended up to 12 years for other types of equipment. All of our substation equipment is typically on a 5-year interval at the most. And then we also have monthly and quarterly maintenance or inspections for things such as like batteries and our line regulators and line reclosers. And we keep track of all of our substation inspections and maintenance through ArcGIS, ESRI application, which is online. And so here's a screenshot of all of our records through 2021, a month ago, and on May 26th. And you can see that there were 691 records done. And if you kind of look at the timeline down at the bottom, you can see how everything's kind of done on a quarterly basis as much as we can. There is times when we are doing projects such as like a substation rebuild where we kind of spread the inspections out more on a monthly basis than a quarterly basis. So that is why there's some peaks and then there's some flat spots. But we do make sure that we get out to every substation at least on a monthly basis and then visit everything else on the quarterly or biannual or annual basis as required. And here's just a screenshot from that inspection program. And the substation technicians access this program through either their field tablet or a laptop, and they just go through the checklist for every single type of device. And every device in our system is on that database, so we have a record going back to the beginning of this application, as well as written records previous to our online application. And here's a sample battery testing sheet showing all of the different cells for the batteries at one substation. In this case, it's a large substation. And there are 24 individual battery cells in a 48-volt battery system. And so you can see the individual results for each 2-volt battery cell, and then you can also get a breakdown of its previous history on the right. And again, all these records, so this is just the printed copy. There's also a digital copy that's saved in the online database for just the battery testing. And here's an example of the maintenance schedule for all of our substations. And you can see when the station was last rebuilt, then the last time the station was shut down, and the future times that the substation's shut down. So every 5 years, we try to take at least a couple of substations offline completely so that we can go through and test and do a thorough inspection and adjustments of anything, and measuring the wear on all the equipment, and actually get into areas that we cannot normally get into because of the high voltage danger. And if anything fails any testing, we can replace it at this time. And this ensures that we don't have any critical failures in the future where an equipment just stops working because it was never maintained. Here's an example of the relays that do most of the work. So all of the voltage sensing, current sensing, any device inputs go from the field into the relays, and then the relays actually do the opening and closing of the breakers. In this case, we have standardized on Schweitzer relays, which is a local company with very good rep, and they have very, very good technical support, and they're kind of an industry standard. A benefit of doing the standardization is that our substation crews and our line crews can go into any substation, know exactly how to operate the relay equipment, and in case of any troubleshooting needing to be done, all of the wiring is the same, all of the relays are the same. So it minimizes the amount of test equipment that we need and makes it so much easier for the substation crews and the operations crews. And also in this picture, you can actually see some of the test equipment down at the bottom. This was taken during the commissioning of these relays, so they were actually going through testing at this point. And here's an example of, in this case, a 69 kV circuit switcher on the left. This provides protection for the substation transformer as well as all of the substation equipment up to the breakers. On the right is a typical 15 kV vacuum breaker that we have been using in our most recent rebuilds. And that provides protection for all of the customer equipment for the distribution feeders. This is the internals of one of those circuit breakers. And everything is kept heated in here and dry. And this is all the wiring that goes back to the relays that you saw on the previous page. And so, as you can see, we effectively conform to PRC04 and PRC05 for the functional requirements, including our maintenance program and then our dispatch and system operation procedures as far as record keeping and all of that. So if you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them at this time. Okay. Well, that is all I have. And again, I'm happy to answer any questions about any of our equipment or anything in general as far as substation equipment goes. And actually our SCADA system as well. So I'm always available. Thanks.
Okay, well, that basically concludes the presentation, including wildfire risk and history, vegetation management, the FAC standard, our substation maintenance program overview, as well as the misoperations and PRCs that Doug covered. Are there any questions on any of these programs, strategic planning, anything that touched upon this? Everybody's on board to answering questions.
John and Doug, this is Rick. I want to thank you for a very good presentation. One of my last jobs before I retired was to help get small entities deregistered, and I worked on that for about 2.5-3 years. So I'm very pleased to see that small entities no longer have to face the $1 million a day risk that they faced beforehand. I'm also very happy to hear that Clallam continues to adhere to FAC 003, PRC 004, and 005. I think that's the prudent thing for us to do, to continue to at least adhere to those requirements. And I think it's a great idea as well to have consistent equipment in the substations. I think that shows some foresightfulness on the part of the management at the PUD. So thank you very much for the presentation. It was exactly what I was looking for.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick. I will say that by deregistering, we did have what would I call administrative and reporting requirements that at some point would go to six digits as far as cost, which is really way out of proportion with what you know, a small utility should be burdened by. But yes, we've established our programs even as we became registered back in 2007, and we continued our functional requirements even to today, even though we deregistered in 2014. We do have an excellent staff that oversees these programs. I personally have been out of it for a number of years, but it's nice to see that engineering and operations are building upon what was set up early on and making it better from everything that I can tell from the presentation. Are there any other questions?
No, that's good, John. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. Great job. I guess if there's no other questions, we can end this now. Jim and Rick, you're okay with ending the presentation and the questioning and answering period here?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm satisfied. That's good.
All right. Thanks so much. You guys have a wonderful week. We got nice sunny weather, so enjoy it. Thanks, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.